Hello, everybody. Welcome to the 100-Year Real Estate Investor. We're your host, Jake and Gino, and this is the show dedicated to long-term personal financial engineering. Gino, how's it going?
Jake, I am not doing as good as you are, my friend. Your hair is looking fresh. F-R-E-S-H, fresh.
Dude, you get good days, and then you get great days. And today is a great day for the hair. I sit back, and I'm saying, damn it, for 41, you're doing pretty damn good, kid. That's all I got to say about that. But, Gino, we got something even more important, slightly, maybe, kind of, I'm not sure. But we have a very exciting show today because we're talking about the five rules to building wealth. And it's not just about my hair, because this is the kind of stuff that can actually change your life, not just mine. Okay, we're not all blessed with good genes like this, so let's dive into the stuff that actually moves the needle for every day.
The first one, the rules. Let's dive into the rules, because for me, building wealth has been a progression. It's been a lifelong journey for myself, and it was really elusive for so many years. And I thought there was these secrets, like you have to do something, and the house hack, and the four-hour work week and all. And I think—
Well, every book that you read tells you it's the secret to building wealth, right? Everyone claims to have the secret. It's true.
I agree. There is no secret. We're going to tell you the secrets right now because there are no secrets. But if you follow these five steps, I think the first one for me is it's mind belief. If you believe you can do it, you can do it. If you set your mind upon it, then you can do it. And I'll share my story. When I first started out, I graduated a long time ago from Fairfield University. It was a dream to become an accountant, to go into finance. I couldn't find a job. There were no jobs when I graduated. It sucked the economy. So I ended up getting a job in corporate America downtown on John Street. 6 months after I got the job, the first Trade Center bombing occurred. And I looked at myself. I said, I don't want to be going down on this train an hour every single day, getting on the 6th train, the subway, going downtown. I said, this sucks. This is just like sucking my soul. I can't see myself creating wealth for somebody else, sitting in a cubicle, having that person tell me what to do, what not to do. I used to get yelled at because they used to say, Gino, you're not doing any work. And I'm like, well, John, if you don't give me any work, I'm going to sit here and do nothing, bro. It was the worst soul-sucking experience.
That was before you could even hang out all day on TikTok and Instagram on your phone, right?
You still weren't doing nothing. Dude, we didn't have Windows. The company was so damn cheap. It was AIG. I had nothing. Forget cell phones. It was nothing to do. It was just, I was reading the newspaper, bro. And you get caught reading the newspaper. You can't be on your phone fooling around. I had the newspaper whipped out, you know, the Wall Street Journal. But it was horrible. So I think the first step is really honing on yourself. There's a couple ways that you're going to be able to create wealth, you know, whether you're getting into a job, getting into a business, investing in real estate, whole life. We're going to get into that. But for me, that very first step was I have to dedicate my life to creating wealth for myself and for my family. And how do I do that? The W-2 job for me was not the way to do that. Now, you can use the W-2 to start funding other things. That's a great way to do it. Because then I look at myself getting into the restaurant business right after that as, oh, that's really, it really is a W-2 job because it's not a business. I'm working by myself. I'm a solopreneur. If I leave, there's no businesses left. But I was able to save money from that business and able to roll it into real estate and to other businesses that ultimately became financially free and ultimately created massive wealth for me.
So Gino, this is really interesting, and I'm going to prove the point that you made. Many people in life give up before they hit the goal. And I'm going to give two shining examples. One, Ray Kroc didn't become a millionaire till his mid-50s. If you don't know, you know, founder of McDonald's and absolutely crushed it. Multi-millionaire, revolutionized the fast food game. And the other one is another fast food gentleman, Colonel Sanders. Same thing with the Colonel. Delicious chicken, mid-50s, later in life. He might have been even in the 60s. I don't know. You Google that and find out. But here's the deal. Most people will just quit before they get there, settle for the W-2 job, get the 401k, and settle and move on with life and never reach their dreams and die. Okay? That sounds terrible. That sounds really depressing. But that's the truth. Now, Gino, you beat Ray Kroc and the Colonel. But you did have a restaurant. So what age were you when you actually became a millionaire?
I was really good with money. We're going to talk about the second part, you know, create the spending plan. I was excellent with money, but I was stuck. I was trading time for money. And at one point, the 2008 recession was a real big drawback for me. That really hurt me economically because my wealth is tied to my business. I bought a couple of investment properties. I lost it. So I would say I probably became a millionaire before I was 30, but then I stuck there. I was stuck. And then I started having children. And then all of a sudden my expenses started creeping up, but my income wasn't going any further. Actually, my income started dropping in the mid to late 2000s because of the recession. I didn't have any other income coming in. I didn't have any kind of streams or revenue.
Okay. So you built it up to say $1.5 million just for shits and giggles, whatever that was.
Yeah,
say Gino's,
probably, yeah,
Gino's mid 30s. He was worth $1.5 million. At what point, though, and because it could have been not, you know, 900,000, million five, but then the light bulb or the switch kicked in. What age were you before that started exploding and you became a multi-millionaire?
Read the book Secrets of the Millionaire Mind in 2008.
Yep.
Opened my eyes up to my financial thermostat. My financial thermostat was set to make $200,000 a year.
Yes.
That was my thermostat. I'd make 250 one year. The next year, I'd go down to 150. But it was always hovering there. 2013, Jake and Gino do their first deal. Holy crap, that very first deal, I'm making about $1,000 a month in that first deal. It doesn't seem like life-changing, but how much are we putting in a deal? I put
20-some thousand.
Myself personally into that deal.
Yeah.
So I got my money back on cash flow within a little over 2 years. But when that first deal was done and we refinanced that first deal, I got that check myself personally for $70,000. That's when the light bulb went off. And then we bought our second deal 3 months after the first. And I'm like, wow, I'm starting to create passive income. Because remember, I'm working at the restaurant, but I'm putting my savings from the restaurant, not into the 401k. I'm have some in whole life. I'm borrowing some out of my whole life to fund the real estate. And I also have savings that's funding real estate. And I'm also plowing back all of my earnings from the real estate back into the real estate business. I still have the W-2 from the real estate, from the restaurant, but I'm plowing all that back in. And I would say by 2015, we're cooking with peanut oil, everybody.
Yeah.
Because all of a sudden we closed an $11 million owner finance deal. Actually, October of 2015, I turn to my brother and I say, Mark, peace out. Love you, bro.
Home.
I'm leaving the restaurant during the week. I will work on the weekends, but during the week, full-time real estate. And then 6 months went by. My wife is like, dude, I'm going to kick your ass if you keep doing this. I was working literally like 80 hours. I was working Monday through Friday. Then Friday night.
I'm a mentality, baby. You can shake
me. Yeah. Friday night at 5 o'clock, I'd go into the restaurant. I'd work all day Saturday, work all day Sunday. Did it for 6 months. And in March of 2016, left that. And haven't looked back since then. I was able to focus on the real estate full time. My brother ended up holding the restaurant.
And every year you're making millions more than you were the prior year. So the point is, you were stagnant for 10 or 15 years of your life, hovering with, we'll say $1.5 million net worth, but it wasn't going anywhere. It wasn't going up.
Yes.
It wasn't going down. It was a stagnant Gino economy until you discovered the real benefits of multifamily, and then it started to propel. So similar to Ray, similar to the Colonel, they probably had less money than you did at the time, but still there's no true trajectory or wealth building until you hit that point where that belief system started to kick in. And that's the point that I was long-winded to get to. Gang, the reason I'm saying this is because you don't quit. It doesn't matter if you're 40, it doesn't matter if you're 50, it doesn't matter if you're 60. If you want a better life, you keep pushing until you hit the goal. You will hit it. I'm confident in that, but you can't quit. That's when you quit, there's no more chance. And I'm going to tell you right now, you're not doing it a W-2. You got to get out there, get a business, start a business, and start investing in real estate. Get with a whole life team, okay? It's owning a business. It's investing in real estate. It's whole life. It's not a 401k, all right? It's not a W-2. And it's not 401k.
And
again,
Jake, we can both say this. No,
let me say it again. It's not a 401k or Roth.
We can say this because we're the pizza guy and the drug rep. I mean, basically, if a pizza guy and a drug rep can create wealth, if Ray Kroc and Colonel Sanders can create wealth, we can
look like a damn pirate, okay?
We can all do it. It's about mind belief. It really is about belief. You know, your behaviors are belief driven. If you believe you can do something, you're going to put your energy and everything into it. We have these interpretations in life. Well, I think this is what the person is thinking. No, if you believe it, you can do it. But the second step is just as important as believing it. You need to create a spending plan. You're not winging it out there and not a budget. I had a good spending plan. I was able to save until my expenses started creeping up. My biggest mistake, probably financially, personally, was I remember living in New York. I had sold a house in New York for a nice hefty profit, probably made like $700,000 or $800,000 back in 2003, 2004. Instead of buying a smaller house or a fixer up or going in, living in it and fixing it up, I end up building a brand new house. Now, I look back at it. It's wonderful because I have amazing experiences. but I probably should have gotten a house that was a fixer-upper, parked that 800 grand in the side, and worked in a house, paid less taxes on the house because it's an older house. That was the biggest mistake. And I didn't have the spending plan because all of a sudden now my expenses are starting to balloon. My property taxes are more. My insurance is more. My lawn care, whatever it is more. That was the thing. I didn't have a spending plan. I didn't understand where the money was flowing. Like, that's my whole thing. I didn't get money flowing. Oh, wow.
Well, you didn't produce any new cash flow with it, right?
Yes.
It was dead money, right?
Yes.
It was no baby money soldiers. You were not creating any new baby money soldiers with that newfound wealth.
Yes.
That was the issue.
Yes. And I think for us, having control of your money is going to allow you to save. That's the thing. I didn't have control of the money because all of a sudden I'm barely surviving. The third one, really important, Jake, is to use debt wisely. And that's one thing. I ended up going at that point, taking out lines of credit and doing stupid things. I had no mortgage on the property, believe it or not. But then I started taking out and I started investing in stupid things that I didn't understand. And I lost the money.
And I think even more important than that, Gino, is business debt and personal debt. Because when you take out business debt, you're going to get a return on that debt. When you take out personal debt, you're killing the baby money soldiers. And that's a huge differentiator. That's why we like business debt and we are okay with business debt because we know we're leveraging other people's money. And when you're getting personal debt, it's typically for a home, dead, killing baby money soldiers. Oh, hey, we need a new back deck, dead, killing baby money soldiers. Oh, let's go buy a boat, dead, killing baby money soldiers. These are the types of things that we hold off for in life until we have the actual cash to purchase those luxuries. And believe me, folks, they are luxuries. We're not kidding here and thinking that, oh, well, I deserve a boat or I deserve this, you know, brand new house. These are luxuries, okay? You take your money when you're at a certain point where you have the cash to buy these things. That's when you've made it, not any time before that.
And that's what the spending plan allows you to do. And it makes you be realistic. You don't deserve anything. I didn't deserve a brand new house or whatever. I didn't deserve any of that.
You weren't ready for it clearly either at the point.
No. And I look back at it. I could have gotten another restaurant 3 or 4 years sooner. Can you imagine if you give me $1 million in equity and I go put that into a deal and I'm earning 8%? That's $80,000 a year that I'm making.
Can you imagine if you gave Gino today that $800,000 versus Gino then the $800,000? How's that money get invested at that point? That's a big difference, my friend.
Yeah, huge. So understand the difference between personal and business. You're levering your business for your personal life. Don't go out and accumulate a ton of personal debt. Now, this next one, number four, this was massive. And this is the way I've taught my wife about investing in real estate. You're saving your money to invest in an asset. You don't save your money for an event. Now, what do I mean by that? The 401k is derived to say, I'm going to save for retirement. Take the money that's in your 401k, buy an asset, and that asset will pay for the event. And when that event is over, all of a sudden, you still have the asset. Our very first deal that we did back in 2013, I've put 1¾ children through college with that first asset. You know, Michael's almost done. He's got another year left. After he's done, guess what? That thing is still printing money.
And hopefully the other ones don't go to college.
I'm struggling with the third one. I don't think she wants to go in. And okay. It may be a good thing. But the point is, if
Set
I had
it at Jakey University, I'll teach her.
If I had the 529, dude, you're probably more expensive. I can't afford you, bro. If I had a 529,
family discount.
The 529 we're playing would have been gonzo. Goodbye, 529. But guess what? I still got the asset that's producing cash flow, and it's appreciating in value. So that was the aha moment for me. I stopped putting money into a 401k. I actually started putting money into my whole life policies because I knew the time value of money, that if and when the opportunity came, I didn't have money in the banking system. Boy, I look like a genius 20 years ago. I'm looking even smarter now. I didn't have that money in the banking system making 1% or 2%. I didn't have a 401k that was locked there until I'm 59 and a half. I had the money there. So when Jakey Poo sent the deal over to the G-Dad over here, I could pull the money out and we can go invest. So saving money to invest in an asset is key to creating wealth.
And I'm just going to reiterate what the G-Dad said. You're not saving for an event in life. You're saving for the asset so the asset or assets can take care of those life events and continue long after those events have passed and the excitement and everything for the wedding or the college has long since passed. So very important point, Gino.
And Jake, this last one, the fifth one, is build relationships. Have you ever noticed that people who are really wealthy are always talking about masterminds. They're always talking about going to events. They're always talking about getting on podcasts. They're always talking about sharing. They've got a great relationship. They can pick up their phone and go, I can ask a person who's wealthy and go, hey, do you have a plumber for me? Yep, I got that contact. I got that contact. People who are wealthy or who have created wealth, who are successful, can lean on other relationships. And that's what I didn't understand in 08. I'm in the kitchen by myself washing dishes. I got nobody. I mean, the guy with the great hair there, he was my first real contact, my first real connection. And all of a sudden, I start creating a mastermind with him. And then we start branching out. We meet our next partner. And then we meet our brokers. And we start meeting all these other people. Eventually, we syndicate. We have investors as well. But building relationships is so underestimated when you're creating wealth. And most of us want to do it all by ourselves, the I'm a mentality. Jim Rohn says it, you're the average of the five people that you surround yourself with. And if you don't look around and take stock of that, man, you are missing a golden opportunity. When I was hanging out with dishwashers and busboys, well, that's the circle I read. And I'm not saying it's good or bad, but that's the level that I was at. I was the smartest person.
It depends on your goals. Right.
Exactly.
Like if you want to build wealth, do you hang around with the guys mopping the floor and cleaning dishes? Probably not. And I'm gonna challenge everyone listening right now. Who haven't you hired yet? That is probably one of the biggest mistakes everybody out there is dealing with yet right now.
I love that.
Who haven't you hired? Because the biggest mistake that me and the G-Dad made early on is we were reluctant to hire. We thought it cost too much money. We thought we couldn't afford it. We had limited beliefs up the ass about hiring and not paying enough. This is the biggest mistake that most early entrepreneurs make. So if you're doing something you shouldn't be doing right now, bookkeeping, washing dishes, whatever it is, systematize, find a great person to plug into that role, because that's where you're probably failing in life.
Before Jake gives me the yank here, I'm going to give you 5.1 because it just popped into my mind. I think this is so important. It's price versus value. You know, the two cheapskates right now on the podcast are always looking at what it costs. Well, where's the value? When you get somebody to edit a podcast, you're making, you know, $20 an hour to do that work, but isn't your time worth so much more? We're always focused on what it costs, what it costs, what mm-hmm. it costs. People who are wealthy look at what the value is. What value am I extracting from that? And I think that's so important to being able to build wealth and create wealth in your life.
It's growth versus stagnation. If you choose stagnation and you choose not to hire, you're going to live in it. If you choose growth and abundance, you're going to live in it. Gang, as always, we believe in buying deals for the long term. Think in decades. I am the growth-minded Jake. And that is the growth-minded G-Daddy. We make it happen. We'll see you next time. Thanks, Gino.